You're in tune to KZSU Stanford. It's time for another edition of Raising Sam.
This one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies. Bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. But we can't bomb it.
Welcome to another edition of Raising San Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, with Michael Frente, Bomb the World to Pieces, introducing today's show. Regular listeners of Raising San Radio know that we bring the voices of and from war to the airwaves, and today it is my great pleasure to bring a presentation recently held at the Beat Museum in San Francisco's North Beach with a trio of Iraq War veterans, John Turner, Drew Cameron, and Eli Wright. They are part of an artist collaborative, the Combat Paper Project, currently touring the United States and sharing their poetry, prose, and their artwork on paper made from their military uniforms. We begin with Eli Wright introducing the event and how the project came about. He refers to the book, and that is The Warrior Writers Move, Shoot, and Communicate, that is created in collaboration with the People's Republic of Paper and available from Green Door Studio, and we'll hear more about that during the course of this hour.
So I got out of the Army in June, and I've been with the project since then. We've been on the road. We just drove here 1,300 miles from Vermont a few days ago, and so we're touring all around the country getting this project out to communities, working with students and poets and activists and all these different people, and it's been an amazing experience, and we've been sort of building a lot of bridges between ourselves and the communities that we're working with. So the Combat Paper Project was started by Drew here, and it was started last year. And I'll let him tell his little piece of the story. But it's a project that we created to build a community amongst veterans. Many of us returned from the war feeling very isolated and alone in our experiences. And so through this project, we've been able to come together and share our stories and share our work with each other. And through that, it creates a healing environment for all of us. And so it's a collaborative project that we all work on together, and it's not something that any of us would be able to do alone had we wanted to. And so the essence of it is for us to sort of build and maintain that community amongst ourselves. And so now we're here, and we really appreciate you all being here, and thank you for coming out and just being here to listen, opening your ears and opening your hearts to what it is that we have to say. So I'm not really much of a storyteller. I used to write a little bit before I went to Iraq. And when I got to Iraq, I went through a very interesting transformation over there, as all of us did, of course. I don't think you could go to that environment and not be changed dramatically. And so I wasn't able to write for the rest of the time I was in Iraq, really. And what I was able to write was very just scattered. It didn't make a whole lot of sense even to me. And I think that was just a result of the entire experience not making much sense to me. And so through this project and through the Warrior Writers Project, I've been able to start slowly beginning to sort of find my words again and share my experiences with what happened over there. And I still haven't gotten very far, but it is a long process. And throughout this, it's been an amazing change. And I've only got one piece. This is a piece that I wrote at the last Warrior Writers Workshop we did at the Art Institute of San Francisco a few days ago. And this is about an experience, not a specific experience, but of an issue that has faced us all as veterans and as family members of veterans. We've all dealt with this issue in one way or another. I have not been able to really talk about or write about this experience much since the time I was over there. And so it was very difficult for me to finally put some of these words down on the paper, and I was able to do that through this last Warrior Writers Workshop. Just being in the environment with other people, you know, sharing their stories and expressing themselves creatively just puts me in a comfortable environment where I'm able to sort of open up. And so the workshops have been a key part of what we do with this project. And so there's a story about suicide. I wrote a poem today, Mom. I said I couldn't do it because my words were missing. So it was a one-word poem, short but to the point. After the poem, I painted a picture, Mom. I said I couldn't do it because my memories were missing. I only had one color, red, but the painting was perfect. So you came in my room to see my work, but all you saw was the hurt dripping down the wall. I'm sorry I became an artist, Mom, but it wasn't my fault. On Thanksgiving morning in 2003, I was in Iraq serving as a combat medic, and a young soldier by the name of Thomas Sweet walked under the stairwell outside of my window and put his gun to his head and pulled the trigger. And that was one of my turning points in the war. And since that time, I come home, and it's a much longer story that I'm not going to go into, but I was able to meet this soldier's mother, and I never really knew him when he was in my unit. I never imagined that I would meet his mother or his family and become part of their lives, but I met his mother through a very interesting series of events, and I've since become close friends with her and with other families who have lost a child, a soldier, to suicide as a result of this war. And that has been one of the things that's really kept me going, was having that close connection. And over 120 veterans in this country commit suicide every month, and I was almost one of those. Many of us were almost one of those. Unfortunately, too many of us have become those numbers, those statistics, and we never really understand the stories behind each of those lives lost. And so bridging that gap between my experience and myself to this soldier's family was an amazingly healing experience for me. And that's one of the main things that's kept me going, as being part of this project and being part of that community of families and veterans is what really has, it literally saved my life after I came home from Iraq and I had nowhere else to turn. I didn't know what to do or where to go. And through finding this project and these other veterans that have become my family since I've been a part of this, that has saved my life. So this project, it changes lives and it saves lives. And so I just want to thank you all for being a part of this with us. I'm going to pass it off to Drew. He'll talk a little bit more about what we're here for.
We build more walls. Coming across the country, you see a lot of things. You see the political landscape, you see the suburban landscape, transportation landscape, but you also see a lot of walls. It's something that we can be really proud of as humanity, is our ability to build walls, both the physical, the literal ones, and the ones that we build up inside of ourselves, to shield off your conscience, your reflection. Whether it's a wall in Berlin, with Ronald Reagan standing in front of it. Tear down this wall! Remember that? It was just a wee little pup. And sure enough, people came out there with their shoes and their hammers, scraps of wood, and they tore down that wall. Or whether it's the walls in Baghdad, the Jersey barriers, these massive concrete barriers running through people's homes and marketplaces that were once the same place are now separated by these walls. Or whether it be the wall in the southern border of this country, springing up with our neighbors to the north, or the walls that we build inside of ourselves through wearing something like this, an identity veteran, shame defined. It can be that, but it doesn't have to be. Because ecologically, environmentally, our sanctity is on its knees. We have choked the rivers and burned the trees, but tomorrow is more than just another day. We build more walls than we tear down, Iraqi sands in a southern town. The movement isn't done. Cloistered times and freedom crimes. Our children's lives, a shadow army dines. These occupations are on our faces and in our homes. But together, we are more than what we have. Combat paper is about taking down walls. We can take apart a wall, but it's important to think about what we rebuild with it, because we can just build another. I'd like to read a poem by a good friend, Matthew Howard. It's called Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder. How is this a disorder? What part of being emotionally and spiritually affected by gross violence is a disorder? How about going to war and coming home with a clear conscience disorder? I think that would be far more appropriate. Matt Howard. Part of the workshop, as Eli was referring to, is like being able to channel and understand that you're part of a common experience, but also being able to channel a lot of experiences that we share together. And I'll read one more, and I'd like John to read some too, but this one is it's called Coming Home. Just really, really briefly, my coming home story was I served in Iraq in 2003, and I was there second wave in the invasion with 4th Infantry. I was a field artillery soldier who didn't do my job over there. I hauled around ammunition and blew it up, and I was supposed to shoot rockets. But my coming home was, I had imagined it for months. I had played it out in my mind again and again and again and again. Like, I'm going to get home and come home with glory and honor. I'm going to be in my Class A uniform, and I'm going to walk up to Katie's door, knock, knock, knock. I'm going to stand there, woo, I'm so excited. And she's going to show up, and we're going to embrace and fall in love and spend the rest of our years together, and it'll be a wonderful thing. We had corresponded over the course, and I'd finally convinced her to fall in love with me. So sure as shit, I show up. I didn't tell her when I was coming home. And I show up at her door, and I knock on the door, and here's her roommate answers it. And Katie's not around. Katie's not home. I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of awkward. So I come inside, and I sit in there, and I'm just talking with this woman. It's kind of the first interaction I've had with civilian since I've been coming back, and waiting for Katie. And she shows up at the door, bright and beautiful, and we went into a relationship for the next 2.5 years, which ended really poorly because I feel my inability to be able to express what it was I was going through or even to approach it. I spent years trying to swallow and bury what had happened and the experiences in war, experiences in military, until much in the same way I was able to find my voice through a project like this or through combat paper. Deconstruction, reclaiming, reclamation, reconciliation. Coming Home by Aaron Hughes. I bought a car, a 68 Mustang. Where do I go? Where do I go? Who do I talk to? I don't know who I should be, talk to, be with, sleep with. I can't sit at home, and I can't be alone. Family at work, friends at school, life was gone a year ago. Who do I talk to? Drive, alone. I'll drive anywhere, go anywhere. Just show me, tell me where I belong. Drive, dark lights, radio loud, louder. I'm lost. Where do I go? Who do I talk to? Pull over high school. My high school, 4 or 5 years gone. My high school with the phone by the gym that would call for rides home. I would wait at these doors for my mother to come. High school, dark, alone, car engine on, humming. Hello? Brian? Hey man, where you at? Should I come over there? I know it's late. Can I come over there? Soon? Dude, I don't know where to go, who to call. I haven't seen you. I can drive there. 2 hours, 3 hours, we can see each other. Soon? Yeah, soon. Car, drive, Chicago, alone, drive. I haven't been alone in so long, and I don't want to be alone. Don't close the door when I sleep. I need to hear you in the other room. Who do I call? Where do I go? Drive. Hello, Dell? Can I see you? No? No, I know I just can't call, but I don't know who to call, where to go. Drive, drive. Drive, streetlights, fall, Chicago air, and I'm alone and the clubs are closed. Where do I go? Who do I call? Drive, drive. Tell the truth. It's written by Aaron Hughes.
I'm still there, you know. I don't want to be, but I can't help the fact that I still see me over there, you know. I try to stay in a way, and I fight, but any given time of day, my mind takes me away to this different place, and I'm looking through the eyes of somebody else's face, and I'm still there, you know. And sometimes I sit and I think to myself, what if it were my number that was picked and put into a container collecting dust on top of a shelf? And I'm still there, you know. This is a short little snippet. It's just because I go back a lot. We all go back a lot. And, you know, that's I can't stand that. And I'm pretty sure everyone else doesn't like it either. But it's really hard to, I've noticed, to carry conversation with people sometimes, because I'll sit there, I'll be talking to them, and it's like a movie playing in the back of my head, and I still see a lot of things, and it keeps rolling, and a lot of times I just have to walk away because I can't help it. And that last little part, I just kind of added in the other night. We were watching a documentary on Arlington. I don't remember what channel, but I remember looking at the back of the tombstones, and it's just one more number, you know? It was 06432 and 06434. And the numbers, it's just like ever since you sign up, you become a number. I mean, we're numbers here as part of this society. I was having a conversation about that the other day. And but even more so in the military, you know, over 4,000 Americans dead. It's like, what number are you? Our dog tags, they're called dog tags. You know, they're on a little, two pieces of metal, and they're on a little metal chain. And they clink around whenever you walk. When you run, the clinking gets heavier. We're just a number, and I don't think people understand how much that really hurts sometimes. We once stood together with our guns screaming the names of Ali and Abbas, bullets tearing through the air. We smiled, we laughed, we didn't care, and the fight was over, and the excitement stopped. When will be the next time that I can look through my sights at the gun, watching the rounds impact within the cropped photograph of a window? Cracked glass and flailing curtains, we have created another widow. This isn't the way it was supposed to be. We united as boys and quickly became the bastard spawn for Uncle Sam himself. We fight for country, we fight for freedom. But what society doesn't know, we are fighting to stay alive. Mental mindfuck games that continue to take their toll on the troubled youth of America. Thank you for signing on that dotted line. If you had problems sleeping at night, take one pill before you go to bed, and you won't have any dreams. Together, we can lose ambition. It's just an orange container away. And time is not on our sides, because we can never get our lives back. And mothers can never get their babies back. And we will continue to breathe through the backs of our skulls until people realize the misconception of this war. Fleep. Fuck you, we've had enough. And I'm gonna pass this back to Drew. I'm just gonna...
You want to go back and forth?
Yeah, no, that sounds great.
Okay.
So here's Drew.
So we're part of this organization. I mean, not all the people who are combat paper makers are affiliated with Iraq Veterans Against the War, because we believe that all war essentially has a commonality of experience, and we know it's true. As I've read back through some of the earlier poets, it comes up again and again and again, these reoccurring themes. But we've been fortunate enough to work with veterans from World War II, Korea, Bosnia, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Desert Storm, Iraq. But it was in the organization IVAW, I get to meet a lot of people and immediately become involved in the community wherever we go. I mean, we came to San Francisco, and there's a group of Iraq veterans that are in here that are organized, that are actively dissenting, that are doing activity around this community, this city, and we can come in and immediately be friends, having never met, and be put up in their house or sharing stories. But some of the things that come out just through conversation, whether outside of workshop, is I hear people talk about, like, I feel so old, man. I feel so old. And I don't know, I don't feel so old. I'm 26 going on 25. I feel like my friend Aaron put it really well. He was talking the story of the day he came back was like the day he was born. And Leonard Shelton, the day he cut up his Marine Corps dress blues and made paper with it was the day he was reborn. But I feel more often than not like I'm looking at the world in a different way now because of, I don't know, because of military perhaps, or because of where I was raised, I'm not sure. The military experience in and of itself is a traumatic experience, and I'm convinced of that. I know for a fact that people who enlist for noble intentions are often manipulated against their will, and outside of the decisions to do things that go contrary to what they're comfortable with, what their morals tell them, what the law says. And this happens again and again and again. One of the things that it's kind of weird to try and to describe and explain about military culture, but there's this desire almost to I know I had it, the desire to kill, the desire to go over in battle and live through that, the honor and glory of it, and to fulfill your role as a soldier and fire a rifle and shoot down the enemy dead. And I never had that opportunity. I never fired a shot. And I came home feeling unfulfilled, and I didn't know why. There was this sort of emptiness, this void inside of me about that I hadn't lived the experience, so I had nothing to complain about. You know, I didn't get blown up. I didn't kill. I shouldn't be complaining. I just did my part, did my time, and it's time for me to move on. But there's so much more within going through the military experience and coming out of it than I feel has been understood. Like even the term veteran, what is immediately conjured in our culture with that term veteran or military service member, whatnot. Part of the culture that I was in was male dominated, machismo, homophobic, sexist, racist, violent, verbally and physically. And it was something that we embraced as an identity and became proud of. And also this sort of idea of redundancy, that my job as an enlisted soldier, as a private, was to drive a tracked vehicle to a heading, and then my chief would get these grid coordinates and all this, and he'd pull a switch, and then we would shoot rockets. But if I weren't there, somebody else could easily pick up that role. Like, I was trained in a task we would often joke that a monkey could do. Like, it's really simplified, but we're there as a rank and file, as many. And so our individualism growing up in the society beforehand, this idea of being a snowflake, of being somebody who has unique qualities that you can achieve to and obtain, were wiped away and radically re-socialized. We took that away and became a number. Dressed the same haircut, walked the same, talked the same. And getting out of the military, they don't undo that. You just are sort of thrown back in to go wander and try and be a snowflake again, I suppose. But it was a worldview change to go from that and then to not even identify with wanting to be comfortable or in a place in American society. I came back absolutely disenfranchised from popular culture and media. And I saw all this farce just started appearing left and right in what we had done and what we were doing. But in order to move on, as some people say, move on, or I think of it, I'd like to think of it rather as embracing, to embrace the experience, to embrace
what we're doing as a country, is the long, hard process of understanding it and trudging through it. You are not my enemy. You are not my enemy, my brother, my sister, but I've done something wrong, and perhaps I am now yours. I went to your home, and I went inside. Soiled your rug and bullied your children. You were not my enemy, my mother, my father. I drove on you, threw garbage into your window, burned your garden and spit in your water. You were not my enemy, my grandmother, my grandfather. I built walls between us. Rubble made sound, sand scattered plastic bags. All around, rifles and checkpoints, bright lights into your eyes. No, you are not my enemy, my partner, my friend. We were betrayed. You are not my enemy, my child, myself. Our blood is the same. You are not my enemy, my memories in rage, remaking sense now, together. You are not my enemy, and you never were. You are a part of me, as I am with you. You are not my enemy. We will stay true. You are not my enemy. We can change this with you. You are not my enemy. There's no difference between all of the horrible things that we say to each other, whether it be Gook or Red or Haji. Did you read something?
You're listening to Raising Sand Radio on KZSU Stamford, FM 90.1, where three Iraq War veterans, John Turner, Drew Cameron, and Eli Wright, share their writing and their artwork. Before he shares more poetry, John Turner explains to the audience that the book he is holding is made from military uniforms and called Warrior Riders Move, Shoot, and Communicate, also created in collaboration with the People's Republic of Paper and available for sale from Green Door Studio to help fund the Warrior Riders project. To learn more about the book or to purchase it, go to www.greendoorstudio.net.
This is a book made from combat paper, which is, this is the uniform paper. And since the project started, we've had over 50 veterans give up their uniforms, either make the paper themselves or donate them for the cause. I shot a gun today. I took the magazine loaded with rounds and hit the heel of my boot to set the rounds in the back. Deep breath. Deep, deep breath. Now crouch down and take a knee. Reach your left hand over and send the bolt home. I shot a gun today. I looked down the barrel and pulled the trigger. Deep breath. Deep, deep breath. Now wrap your left arm through the sling and rest the gun in your left hand. Take your right thumb and flick the safety off. I shot a gun today. I felt the rounds leave the barrel and watched them hit the target. Deep breath. Deep, deep breath. Now wrap your right hand around the pistol grip and put your finger on the trigger. Wait for the exhale and squeeze. Crack! Squeeze. Crack! Squeeze. Crack! I shot a gun today, and I put all the rounds into a book, not a human. Week and a half, 2 weeks ago, Eli, Drew, and myself, and John, and a couple other veterans. I think Andrew was there, and what was the guy's name?
Roger.
Roger. We went to his house in over in Vermont backwoods, and he had like a little sand pit in his backyard, pretty much. And we went out there and brought some books, and we brought some some dollar bills and a teddy bear and a few other objects, and we shot them with guns. We also had an AR-15, which is the civilian issue M16. And it's crazy because none of us have shot that weapon since we were in the military. So for me, it had been year and a half, two years since I had shot. And for Eli, same. And for Drew, even longer. And it's like we could all come together and shoot this weapon that we carried for 4 years at, you know, at paper targets or live targets. And this time they were stationary books that we had made. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I would like to read two more. Is that cool? Okay. Wandering, searching for a cause without reason. We do not know why we are fighting. Aimless roaming for hours on end. There are weapons in our hands, and these people have none. They are holding on to kites and brooms. They are trying to live their lives. Why aren't we living ours? There is nothing patriotic about fighting this war unless you're fighting against this war. If we come home, we are quickly forgotten, and we choose to look away. No, no, our voices will rise, and they will be heard by those who have forgotten that they didn't serve, by those who still believe this war is right. Look into a vet's eyes and tell me that they haven't been affected by this grotesque nature that we grew up by. Tell me that they haven't changed. We want to write about something beautiful. We don't want to write about war. We're sick of writing about violent actions. We're sick of writing about our past. We want to write about now and not then. Yes, we signed on that line and we gave up 4 years of our lives, but we were misled. And there is no glory in death. There is no pride in carrying unnecessary pain. If we're lucky, we will learn from it. But thanks to the way our society is brought up, many will not. So we had a writing workshop with a creative writing class up at the Art Institute of San Francisco. And one of the exercises that we did was that we usually do whenever we go out to local bars up in Burlington, and it's usually called Lyrics of an Evening. We'll make little, tiny, tiny little books and then just go back and forth and write. So I would write something, and then Drew would write something, and then Eli would write something, and then pass it along and get everyone else to feed off of what was written before. This is one of the pieces that this classroom created, and I just wanted to share that with you. It all starts with a seed, and all my teachers lied. There is no one to trust, sometimes not even ourselves. Love is a lesson not all of us learn. Why didn't you realize the dream I put into your heart? It's time to plant more seeds, time to let the seeds grow and start something new. Letting go to try and start over. I can't make it on my own, ain't no sunshine when you're gone. But sometimes darkness is a powerful lesson in personal change. Darkness can bring lessons, seeds can sprout anew, but too many seeds planted, too little sunlight shown, can result in nothing learned. Or you can learn from all seeds planted, and together you can grow. So. We're all very appreciative to be here sharing poetry and our artwork with you. It really means a lot. You know, it's like we're trying to fix ourselves. We're trying to fix society, and it starts with groups like this, community, you know? And I know both Drew and Eli had brushed up on that, but I'm going to say it again because it's very important. We need to get our heads out of our asses and spread the good word, because if not, then we're going to shit. And that's all I can really say about that. So, I mean, together, like, we can do this and we can make the difference. You know, we are the revolution.
I'm going to read a piece without his permission.
I'm sure he'd be okay with it, though. Actually, I know he'd be okay with it, because he wrote it in a book that's meant to be read. It even says it right here. This is where you write. This is written by good friend, former Marine, Liam Madden. And the context is, there's some acronyms. Denver, he wrote this in Denver. We were in the Democratic National Convention in August. No, we weren't attending. We were protesting and demanding to be heard and to gain access.
It was really great. And the other is OFC, Operation First Casualty, which is guerrilla theater that veterans have been doing around the country. There's going to be one coming up in San Francisco on Black Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving. And it's basically squad patrols throughout the city of veterans acting and performing as if they were in the streets in Iraq and Afghanistan. Here we are in Denver, putting on our uniform again and making a spectacle. That is the last OFC I will ever do. If we are not able to awaken our country, I will be happy knowing that while we try to, we are creating a life of community and loving experiences in the meantime. Maybe that's our reward. The more I seek identity with love, joy, and peace, instead, the more I attract experiences like seeing Jeff's play and the unbelievable openness that followed, the more I attract people who give their lives and their friendship with complete effortless, the more I attract the physical, emotional, and spiritual tools I need to evolve into the being human I hope to achieve. It is so strange to think about how IVAW has brought meaningful moments and made a new and more kind man out of me. It is stranger to think that without a disgusting war, that the vehicle for my rebirth would have never been. War, I used to believe, was never good but sometimes necessary. War, I used to believe, could defend good things despite the inevitable pain that would result. Then I believed that I was not a pacifist only because there were some things worth fighting for. There has to be, right? Now I know war is a complete failure. If there is a war, humanity has failed. If people get to the point where they believe killing is a viable solution, humanity has failed. It is absurd to think that people view war in any other way. I won't die wishing that I loved more. I won't die wishing I forgave more. I am happy, knowing I am evolving into a better being human because of a war. I forgive you, war. I don't condone you, but I forgive you. I forgive you, humanity. Even while you fail, I forgive you. Liam Madden. Does anyone have any questions or comments or like anything they want to say? Yeah, or stories?
I'm curious if any of you did like sporting arms as boys growing up. Did you shoot game and what?
I played war in the woods with sticks.
I'm sorry?
I played war with sticks in the woods. That was it, though.
Is that what you mean in terms of like how early on did we become like involved with this?
You know, just you knew the number of the bullet hole, and I don't know. I was just wondering if sporting games, sporting arms was part of your culture growing up.
I've never hunted before. I've never even fished before. Joining the military and learning how to shoot a rifle under those circumstances was the first time I'd ever personally address the issue.
Many people in the military do come from that background. Many of them come from, you know, small town, rural environments where they'd hunted and things like that long before they joined the military. But many of us that come from cities and stuff had never fired weapons prior to enlisting.
I met this dude the other day, specifically from World War II. I think perhaps a Vietnam veteran, best apt to explain that. But what was his name? Has anyone ever heard of the Catonsville Nine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I met Jerry Barrington in Syracuse, New York. World War II veteran. And his wife is introducing him. He's kind of waning in age. And he was there to see the combat paper and hear us read poetry and whatnot. He had been arrested 35 times in protest and dissent. And I thought that was right on. But the the conversations last night about the World War II specifically as well is that people kept saying again and again it was something that my grandfather or my father never talked about, and I wish it hadn't been so. But I think that may be the case.
for the Greatest Generation or whatnot, and now that there aren't very, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of World War II vets left, but Vietnam, I don't know, it's been great to meet Vietnam veterans and to understand that their work that they did and are doing is directly connected in terms of, I mean, our name, Iraq Veterans Against the War, comes is direct lineage of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And that it's important for us to realize that this struggle is intergenerational, and that we have to be aware of what solidarity actually means, that indeed we are doing the work that many others have in many other different ways, whether it be through the written word or play or organizing and pushing back. But I think it's really important for me because my family isn't, my immediate family is military, was military. My extended family has no relationship to it, really. None whatsoever. So we were kind of like this outcasted part of the extended family. It was just my father who served in the military, his father, but all of his brothers and siblings, and on my mother's side, nobody ever did. He came into the military right when Vietnam was winding down in 72. And he came into a military that was broken and strung out and falling apart, and they rebuilt it over the course of his career in the Air Force. But he tells me stories about remembering what it was like to live through that in the 60s and 70s. And it's really important for me that Vietnam veterans are willing to work with us because, I don't know, it makes me feel more empowered and belong more. Because indeed, I mean, it's the same old story, and it's sad and tragic. But perhaps that through the work, we can prevent it from ever happening.
Do you guys are from back east? Is that what I picked up? I'm sorry.
Vermont. I'm all over.
Vermont.
Vermont's where we currently reside.
When you guys, how did this all kind of happen? I'm sorry I was late, but I probably missed that. But I'm curious, one person said, hey, we need to be writing. I mean, how did that, I'm a writing teacher, and so I'm very curious about that. And I've taught writing in different situations. Around traumas and stuff, and so I'm kind of curious as to how you guys kind of how that happened. And do you have somebody who like says, okay, tonight I want you to like write a paragraph on such and such, or is there anybody who kind of throws writing exercises at you, or do you just do that together, or how does this all happen?
We do it together. We recently had a retreat back in July where we had over 27 veterans. So throughout the week, we would get together and write. And Lavella, who is one of the editors of the Warrior Writers Program through IVAW, she usually is in charge of like all the workshops. So she'll give us different exercises, and it's all voluntary. You don't have to go to them, but a lot of people do end up showing up. Mm-hmm. And so then we feed off of each other, you know. And like the exercise that we just that poem that I just had read, you know, we'll do stuff like that, or pick poetry from Vietnam or World War II, and like take out a part, like a word or a phrase or some part of that poem, and tie that into our experiences or something, whatever we want to write about. So, I mean. And then, like, whenever we have a large group of us together randomly, I mean, sometimes we'll just get together and, you know, just write. We'll go down to the studio, make artwork together. It doesn't matter. I mean, we're always around each other, so sporadic things happen sometimes.
Yeah. So the Green Door Studio is an artist collective in Burlington, Vermont, that started in 2002 by the artist Drew Matat and his partner at the time, Lydia Bright. And they started under a simple premise, one based off of one they were part of in Buffalo, New York. And it was that they would have a gallery, and around this gallery there would be separate places, and that together artists in resident could collectively play for the lease of the flat. And so it's been functioning, and the rent's been stable since 02. And it continues to work in that way. In the sort of the foundation of it is a paper studio, a paper mill, called the People's Republic of Paper, where we work full time. And PRP
is the sort of ongoing thing that manages and runs the Green Door Studio, and then it's sort of somewhat transient population, but because it's a really energetic place, most of the people there are stable, like they've been there for years. And it has a dark room, a paper mill, and then there are painters and sort of mixed media, and then also a band, and then we have our gallery where we rotate shows every month. In PRP is where the Combat Paper Project started in last year, and the work is ongoing. Is that kind of hone in on Green Door Studio and where we're coming from, kind of? And we function, just want to throw it out there, we function under what we refer to as the open door policy. So if you ever find yourself in Burlington, Vermont, please come make paper with us. Has anyone ever made paper? Does anyone know what the paper making process is like? Indeed. There's a limiting factor, unfortunately, is a Hollander beater. So breaking rag is something, it's an age-old tradition that was practiced in Western Europe. And basically, it would take old linen cloth or old cotton cloth and cut it up and beat it in a Hollander beater, which is this machine that essentially stamps or grinds the constituent components of a textile into a pulp. So the Hollander beater will pulp the uniform. From there, all you need is water. And so you can make it on the street, you can make it in a studio, you can make it in the forest. And we will be very soon receiving the first pedal-operated Hollander beater. We have it designed by this guy, Lee Scott McDonald, in Massachusetts, and it'll be kind of a traveling component for workshops, sure. Because thus far we've been able to only visit areas that have papermaking facilities there, so that veterans can come, bring their uniform items, go through the ritual, and make paper together. But with this mobile pedal-operated beater, we'll be able to travel anywhere, which would be great. And again, all you need is water. And our hope and our work is that more people, more veterans, will utilize creative means through writing, through papermaking, on their own, so that we don't have to travel. That there will be combat paper workshops out here from the veterans that are trained, or down south, or in Colorado, or wherever it may turn up, wherever it may be. It's like about perpetuating the craft as well, I think. Handmade paper, perpetuating handmade paper. Drew Matat, who is a close friend of ours and integral in the Combat Paper Project, says you're not a paper maker until you've taught another person how to make paper. And that's much of what paper making is all about, is about spreading the knowledge and trying to get encouraging other people about this process, because I studied forestry, I studied ecology after I got out of the military at the University of Vermont. And for me, there's something really grounding and intentional about taking a plant or taking a rag and going through the process of creating something with it, something functional and useful. And papermaking as craft, as much as it has, a lot of it has turned into, but it's also paper as art and paper as necessity. You know, we have definitely segregated ourselves from the process in the industrial ways, but there's still a large number of possibility with taking old compost or taking old bills and using a blender in your kitchen and a screen from your window and making sheets of paper, and doing with them what one would do with paper, I suppose. Passing it along or making a book. So I'm really interested in that. It seems, yeah, there's a process and it's intentional.
It's also a dying practice, and in the digital age, we're losing our connection with paper, but that's been a common bond that cultures have shared around the world for, you know, generations upon generations, is paper. Mm-hmm. It's how we pass our knowledge and our, you know, wisdom on to each other in many ways, and so it's something that less and less people are taking up as either an art form or a craft. For me, I think it helps me maintain a sense of connection with where I come from.
And the funny thing is, it's also traveled because of war ever since way back in the day. And now we're recreating that because of this war.
I was on active duty for a long time while being a member of IVAW also.
We've got members signing up online from Iraq every day. We've grown to over 1,200 members in, well, it's been 4 years, but that number has doubled in size over the last year, so it's rising fast, and more soldiers, active duty soldiers from all over the world are joining. Well, not from all over the world, but stationed all over the world are joining.
Casey Porter is a guy who was stop-lost and is currently in Iraq and has been making films about what it's like day to day, and they come out like every 2-3 weeks maybe. Mm-hmm. They're like these dispatches, these 5 or 8 minute dispatches. He must have someone helping him edit it stateside, but they're amazing.
No, he does it all on his laptop over there.
They're amazing. It's like a glimpse into, because you'll hear what's, you know, you hear all the rhetoric and into the media, what's going on in Iraq. And then he this is sort of from his perspective and from the perspective of the enlisted soldier on the ground. And they're absolutely amazing.
It's on YouTube. He has his own channel on YouTube, and they're all short films, about 5 minutes or so. So just look up his name on YouTube, Casey J. Porter.
That was John Turner switching back to Drew Cameron. Go to greendoorstudio.net to learn more about the Combat Paper Project and to buy the book Warrior Writers Move, Shoot, and Communicate. As mentioned, you can go see footage of combat and how the troops live and work in Iraq by going to YouTube and searching for Casey J. Porter, and you'll be taken to his portal with lots of very interesting and relatively short clips. We'll also have clips from this event at the Beat Museum on the Raising Sand Radio affiliate Motherspeak Media, www.motherspeak.org. You can then go and view the warriors themselves and see them actually reciting their poetry. The Raising Sand website, www.raisingsandradio.org, has archived a lot of shows with war veterans and their families from the current wars back on through Vietnam and many different perspectives, including the ongoing health environment effects of the defoliants used during Vietnam War. I'm mentioning this because we will be airing more on the ongoing struggle for justice for the victims of Agent Orange in the next weeks. On the continuing story of Troy Davis, last week I reported that the U.S. Supreme Court decided not to hear Davis's appeal and tossed Troy Davis's life back into the hands of Georgia, whose Supreme Court had already denied the appeal on procedural grounds. U.S. Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, speaking for the minority, questioned the adequacy of Georgia's appeal process involving other cases where Stevens found it particularly troubling Georgia's track record with respect to cases involving black defendants and white victims. So Troy Davis's execution was back on. Actually, it was rescheduled for today, October 27th, but now it's back off again as Georgia stays the execution for the third time. Georgia's prosecution lawyer Spencer Lawton continues to press for the death penalty. Asked recently in a radio interview if the unusually high proportion of witnesses trying to recant their testimony against Davis did not perhaps undermine the credibility of the trial testimony, Lawton responded that the high number made the recantation suspect and too much of a coincidence. After all, he asked, if you couldn't trust the witnesses then, how are you going to trust them later? Lawton went on to suggest that the clamor raised on behalf of Troy Davis by public interest groups such as ACLU, Amnesty International, and the Innocence Project is tantamount to a mob gathered outside jurors' doors. And Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa and the Pope, the Vatican, has also joined, I suppose, that mob gathered outside the jurors' doors because they have raised their voices against this execution too. But to learn more about it, go to Amnesty International's website at www.amnestyusa.org. And you can still call the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles at 404-651-6671 or tell your friends to call 404-651-6671. Views expressed in today's shows are those of the host and guest and not KZSU or Stanford University. Thanks for listening and come back next week when we'll be airing voices of the presidential election from the swing state of Colorado, from the point of view of volunteers getting out the vote, as well as ordinary people in Colorado who have changed their party identity for this election. Some of them, for the first time ever in their lives, have decided to vote across party lines. Hope you join us next week on Raising Sand Radio, and we'll go out with Michael Franti, Bomb the World to Pieces.
Colors that you fly, love just one nation, and the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry, there is no other choice. God bless the people now. Cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa. Flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. To all of us gone crazy, I sing this one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but can't bomb it into peace. I say power to the peaceful, love to the peaceful young. I say power to the peaceful, love to the peaceful young. We may even find the solution. And bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world into pieces, but we can't.